You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
So, welcome to The Dice Men Cometh. On today, the 11th of November. It is the Thursday and it is episode...
It's October, Garth.
Oh, I don't care. I'm on holidays in a week. Yeah. Now, it might not be surprising to Mark and Leon that I walked into a bottle shop
really?
On Sunday.
No,
the reason for that, it was my daughter's 8th birthday and I needed something to get over all the noise and all that garbage that was
and
going on.
And she loves a bevy. We know that.
No, this has been recorded. And as I walked in, I started to think... Walking into a game shop and walking into a bottle shop has a lot of similar qualities about it. Because you walk in and you go, well, I know I like that. And I know I don't like that. And I might like that, but I'm a bit scared to try it. I don't know whether I'm going to like this, you know, certain aspects of the wine or the board game, if you want to keep the similarity going. But the one thing that made a really big difference is the person I was speaking to. And I was able to speak to this guy at the bottle and say, I've got to survive an 8-year-old's party. What am I going to drink? And I said, I like this kind of wine. I like this kind of this and this kind of this. And the guy was really, really great and said, you should really try this. And I thought, that's fantastic. I loved it. So I had a great time at the party. Now, the other thing that this got me thinking about is how the dice men themselves are very much like wine. We've got Leon,
yeah,
who is like this freshly bottled, brand new, clean skin that if you open up the wrong way is going to tear your head off and destroy you.
Sure.
But after a little while, you know, he grows on you and it's kind of nice.
I am quite a nice person in for reals.
And then you've got me who's just middle of the road, absolutely boring as dependable, reliable, but absolutely meh. The kind of person...
Really?
You know, you'd sort of go and introduce him to your mum and have a quiet drink and go, yeah, that was nice. But that's about it.
Fine. It's fine.
And then you've got Mark.
Yeah, he goes.
Vinegar in it.
Oh, no, it's been just in the cellar, just maturing, just getting hopefully better and better as the years progress. And then the moment when you finally get to open this bottle and you open it. Pour it out and you have a taste and you go, oh, it's corked.
Mm. Yeah.
past its best, perhaps.
Absolutely. So, look, welcome to episode 200 and whatever of the Dice Men Cometh.
233.
Yeah.
The introduction brought to you proudly by myself, yes. Garth, Leon and Mark. And we'll throw in Area 52 because they are Tasmania and Hobart's number one game shop, nerd shop, geekery, all of those kinds of things.
Now, normally, Garth, we throw to you for what we're talking about on this week's episode, but I'm going to do it this week.
You should.
Yes, because I am. Because today, we have a bit of a theme. We like to do these from time to time. We have a bit of a theme, and the theme is classics. Some of us in this room may be considered that, some maybe not. What we're going to do is just talk about three games. We're going to do three what we've been playing, which I think is unheard of. We've never done before. Just
Absolutely.
Talk about three games considered classics. But also, on the drive here, I thought, what I should do is remind everybody, none of this nostalgia nonsense, I've got to remind everybody that today, as in right now, where we are, 2018, is actually pretty damn good. So what I was going to do is every now and then just drop in random things from the past that weren't very good, just to remind everybody that today is not that bad. But my brain is so fried after a 12-hour shift that all I could think of on the 20-minute drive here was two negative things. What do you reckon they are?
having cords on phones?
No. Sugar rationing. And polio. That's it. That's all I've got.
And on that note, Mark, throw us to a song.
Here's some classics. Whoever thought the Dice Man would be bringing some class to the Edge Radio
studio. We're bringing
studio.
Classic back.
Because we're going to be talking about some classics of gaming tonight. Just thought I'd throw in a little bit of classics there. That was John Williams, the famous guitarist, with a trio for lute, violin and Basso something or other. The word got chopped off on the name of the track. But it was John Williams, and we're here on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, episode 233 of The Dice Man Cometh. Now, Leon.
Yes.
You're going to talk to us about a classic.
I am going to talk.
A classic board game.
Indeed, I am. However, even though it is a classic, I do kind of have to, I think I have to kind of beef it up a bit, or, you know, sex it up a bit, if you will be,
ooh,
to make it a bit more exciting to the younger listeners. So, Spain, 15th century. One country, 12 kingdoms. The nobility, the grandes, rule. But the middle nobility, the caballeros, want to take over as everybody fights for Spanish independence in El Grande, 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 Grande.
Wow. How earnest was that?
Yeah.
That was amazing, Leon. I would put that in my top 10, I don't know, something.
Oh, the enthusiasm tonight for Classic Week is amazing. So, El Grande, which came out in 1995. I was 8 years old.
Oh, shut up.
What were you lads doing in 95?
95, I was watching a lot of The Simpsons.
So was I.
I was in, I think, grade 10.
Yeah, I would have been in grade 2.
That's the year before my 10-year naval career ended.
Wow.
Okay.
We're very similar people. Anyway, so El Grande itself, it's gone through 6 publishers over these some 23 years. Most of them are European ones, but it has gone through Rio Grande, funnily enough, and it is now with Z-Man Games. Mm. The only way you can get this game is the big box edition, which comes with lots and lots of different expansions, which we're not going to talk about because we haven't tried, because you don't need those expansions to play this game, because spoilers, which I do this nearly every week now.
You sure do.
Is good. Now, so it was designed by Wolfgang Kramer, who's done things like Torres, Takao, Carl Baron.
Ow.
He's done the Australian comedian Carl Baron, or Cole Baron, even the board game, Colosseum, Mexica, and most recently Downforce, which I didn't realise was him at all.
He has done about 23 pages worth of games, according to Board Game Geek.
Yeah, a couple of them.
And I think I can't remember. I think he's won 3 Spiel des Jahres, although all of them were relatively early, like before 2000.
Yeah, well,
and I think he might be the only person who's won 3 of them.
That sounds about right. And the art for this game is by Doris Mathias. I've probably butchered that last name, I apologise. Who did the art for Tigris and Euphrates, the original, St. Petersburg, and the original Carcassonne.
Yeah,
which
wow.
You can definitely see in El Grande, that's for sure.
She's definitely got that dour Middle Ages, people staring off into the distance look down, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's still on a Euro board game every single time it gets played.
So these games that we're going to talk about today, they are classics. And the reason, one of the things that makes them classic is they are simple. They come from a simpler time. The 90s, a simpler time without new metal and whatnot. Much, much simpler time with simpler folk. So this game is, it's pretty much pure one thing. And that pure one thing is area control.
Mm.
Garth will be talking about a game later that is also pure of another thing. But this one is area control. So think of it as the granddaddy to your small world. And other things of that type of nature.
Every other game that controls makes you want to control more of something than anybody else.
Yes. So the way this is going to be, there's got the board set out, and you're each going to have a certain amount of your guys out there, or caballeros, as they're called in this, which I believe is the name of that young guitar prodigy from Hey Hey It's Saturday from 30 years ago. Was that Caballero?
Nathan Cavalero.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, so they made a game about him for some reason.
I used to go to the supermarket and buy one of those. Oh, that was Capanossi.
Anyway, so what you're going to be doing in this game is that everybody has a set of cards in their hand, numbered from 1 to 13. Because what you're going to be doing is kind of bidding on the turn order, which is something I hadn't really seen before. And seeing this game's 23 years old, I'm amazed no one has ripped it off. But they haven't for some reason. So there's actually 9 rounds in this game. You actually score on the 3rd, 6th, and 9th round. That's how simple it is. You play a few rounds, you score a round, play a few rounds, score a round, and that's all you do for 9 rounds. So you have 13 cards, numbers 1 to 13, and you're going to be playing one of these each round. So you only have 4 left at the end. Sometimes you can get the cards back, but it is very, very rare. So what you're trying to do is determine each round, how desperately do I want to go higher up in the turn order? Because you could first round, first go straight away, I'm putting my 13 down, guaranteed to go first. But you play these face up. These aren't blind bids. So you play it face up, and then everyone goes, well, they've got their his trump cards out of the way, done and dusted.
And it's done in player order, so it's very, very obvious.
Yes.
Oh, Mark, you really don't care about going first, and you played a number, whatever it is, and Garth, he doesn't care. But Leon, you've got all the power by going last. You can really control where you slot into that player
order. Yeah, you go last, and you go, I can pick exactly where I'm going to go. Mm. So once you have picked out the turn order, then what you're going to do is you're each going to pick one of the power cards that are there. Now, there are six of these out here in a five-player game, which is, everyone going to tick off their bingo sheet, I would recommend.
Because the game, not less than four and a half.
The game is kind of built around five players, which for an area control game, you want more people on the board as possible because you want that dogfight, which is what this game is all about. So you've got six power cards to choose from. And each of those power cards, between one to six, you'll be able to place a certain amount of Caballeros onto the board, depending on which card you pick. And also there's a special power on there. So when you take it, you can choose between putting your guys out or playing the power, and you can choose what order that you do that in, which is very important because the power could make the guys stronger or whatnot, but you need to figure out where to put them.
And that's usually where the turn order is quite important, because the cards, as well as having the numbers 1 through to 13, mm-hmm. have the numbers of Caballeros that you're allowed to take from your pool and put them into the available sort of spaces. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You've got your general supply, and then you've got your bring them into your court before you put them onto
that's
the board.
That's right. Yes. So,
and you can get between, so on the, I think, the 13 card, I don't think you get any, maybe. No. And then right down to one, I think you get six.
Correct.
And because you, part of the game is working out, okay, I can go high because I want to go first, but also I don't need to get more Caballeros.
Yes.
But, or if I need Caballeros, I might have to play a lower card and go later in the turn order. It's a really interesting decision every turn.
And then a certain power card will let you place a certain amount of them onto the board, where now there's a very, very important part of this, which comes with one of the best pieces, game pieces in the whole hobby, which is the giant king piece. The king is very, very important in this game. It is a giant black pawn which sits on the board. And when you put out your dudes, they have to go in an area adjacent to the king. But they can never go in an area where the king is. But that is also the same for everything in this game. Where the king is, you can put nothing. You can put no guys, you can put no special powers, you can put no special tiles. Absolutely nothing. You have to put things adjacent to the king. Or you can put them in the, butcher this pronunciation, the castillo.
Castillo.
Which is basically the cool little castle thingy that's on the
board. It's not little. It's really big.
It is quite big. You do have to say how many guys you're putting in there, because when it comes to the scoring round, everyone's going to secretly bid on places that those guys are going to go, and they're basically just going to be like jumping out of this massive tower and onto the map, as well as you can score points for it as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to say, and with the king, you mentioned the power cards. One of those power cards, because all the others are pretty much changing, but one of those power cards is always you get to move the king.
Yes.
And that key decision of whether you move the king before or after your turn, which gives you the ability to either move and then lock down the area perhaps that you move to,
mm-hmm.
or lock down an area and then move somewhere else. And that is a really, again, an interesting decision every turn. Who's going to take the king? What are they going to do with it?
Yeah, and you're stopping people from, as you said, going into certain provinces. You might want to move him completely away from him. Mm. Well, Garth definitely wants to put guys up in the top left. If I move him down this space, he can't get to the top left this turn.
That's right.
And stuff like that. So it is. This game is cutthroat. It's exactly what we kind of like.
It's fantastic.
It's all about just destroying other people, which is, you know, what you want. So you're going to be doing that. You're going to be putting out guys, playing these power cards, building up different regions. And then, as I said, on the 3rd, 6th, and 9th round, you're going to be scoring. And that is just as simply as who has majority in each region. And then different regions are worth different points, and they can change throughout the game as well. You also have these pieces, they're grandes, I believe, which are like your
big cubes.
The big meeples, which is kind of like your home dude, home castle type thing. If you have majority there, you get two extra points. If you have majority where the king is, you get two extra points. And you do that for the 9 rounds, and that's pretty much it.
Yes, except those 9 rounds are amazing.
Yes. This game is spectacular, and I cannot... When we played it, I'd heard of it, and I knew that our friend Carl had bought the big box of it. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it whatsoever. And then we sat down to play it, and so this game is 23 years old, and I cannot believe that no game has essentially completely ripped this off and done the exact same, like stolen these mechanics perfectly, because it is, mechanically, it is perfect. It's exact. That's why we've got a big box full of expansions that we haven't even looked at yet, because you don't bloody need them.
One of the things I found fascinating is the scoring is laid down in each region. Some regions you get points for first and second. Some you get first, second, and third. And they're all different. So there's often people vying for, well, that one is might be a 6 or 7 points for first, whereas others might only be, say, 4 points. So there's going to be a lot of tussling over that. But all of a sudden that means there's lots of caballeros tied up in that. And it's close. Then you've got those little movable scoreboards that you can, from a power card, mm-hmm. move one of those little movable scoreboards, and perhaps all of a sudden that, instead of being worth 7 for first and 5 for second and 3 for third, it might be worth 4 for first and nothing else.
Ugh.
Just how you can change it up, and then people are running out of there. I love it. I love it.
And the power cards are exactly what you think they would be. They are put some extra guys out here, move this person's stuff somewhere else, take people's things completely off the board.
Hate that one.
Scatter somebody's army to completely different places, yeah. That kind of thing. And then you've got the Castillo as well, like I said, that every time you have those scoring rounds, you've got a certain amount in there that are going to be blindly put out to different regions. So you think you might have control, and then all of a sudden you've got three essentially paratroopers just coming in and taking control. So you've got to try and remember who else put stuff in there, where they might go to affect the kind of board, and yeah, it's great.
You know what I think? Perhaps why this game hasn't been reproduced as something else is, if you think about the modern-day board game aesthetic, and particularly all these the things that are coming out all the time on Kickstarter, and you look at this game, if you took it on face value, you wouldn't take it. Like, no. You would just look and go, oh, my God, how bland, yep. How boring, mm-hmm. How ordinary. Why would I ever play that when I can play this colourful mini-fest with beautiful art or lots of fancy wooden pieces or plastic pieces or fancy money, or it is literally from a different era.
Yep.
And if you put it near a modern board game, people wouldn't even look twice at it. But the beauty that's under the bonnet, I mean, talking about mixing my metaphors, not judging a book by its cover, it's so elegant and so simple, yet so brutal and so perfect in this genre. Now, I know a lot of people might say, not me, but a lot of people might say maybe, you know, a modern classic area control might be something like Inish.
Yeah. Well done, Mark.
Not me.
Good on you.
But there's nothing, I mean, there are so many area control games, but there's nothing really that comes is as pure as this.
Yes, pure is the exact word. This is, like I said, the reason I brought up what it was. This is pure area control. Yeah. It's not the game that invented that. Obviously, you know, Risk is area control. You could even argue that a Monopoly is kind of area control, kind of. So this definitely kind of perfected it. And that's why, again, it's 23 years old. You would assume someone's done it better since. But I don't know if they have, which is kind of crazy. The kind of thing that is a bit annoying, though, is that the only way you can get this nowadays, even on, like, secondhand online, is the big box edition, which is fine because it's really nice and it's really big and it's got all those expansions if you ever wanted. If you played this so much, you wanted to add extra stuff, which is grand. But
it's L grand, even.
It's L grand. Well done. But it's very expensive.
Yeah, it's so pricey.
It's saying to somebody, a 23-year-old game that's going to cost you, in Australia, easy 150 quid, you go, whoa. But then you think, well, how much money have I wasted on Kickstarters? Ended up being rubbish anyway.
Exactly.
But you just don't think that way. But you just think a game that's this old, I should be able to pick it up for 20, 30 bucks.
You will get $150 worth out of this
yes.
game.
Oh, yes.
Well, we played it once and I bought it the next day.
Wow. Yeah.
And you're not
normally into these sort of bland old school classics.
No, but the fact that it was so cutthroat, and the fact that the game that we played, which was us three, our friend Carl and former Dice Man Trent, as I've said before, it is one of the best gaming, I don't know how you put it, gaming nights, game experience, whatever it was. That game we played of El Grande was excellent, because it was, from what I remember, me and Mark battling it out for first and second. I recall you and Carl battling out for third and fourth, and Trent,
he was getting the drinks.
He was getting the drink, and boy, did they flow that night. And Yeah, it just was great.
And who won that game, Gar?
I can't remember. So anyway, just to say, as far as BGG rankings go for the area control, area influence, I guess, style of games, number one, Twilight Struggle, two-player game.
Sure.
Number two, Star Wars Rebellion, two-player game. Number five, War of the Ring, two-player game. And, look, El Grande makes it onto page number two, and it's probably game, 12, 13, something like that, still of the area control, area influence games after 23 years. Now, the great thing is the number of players. You can have five people all sitting around having the time of their life, as long as you don't take it personally, because you will really, really lose, and occasionally you'll really, really win big too.
And if you think how many games are out there, after 23 years, it's still ranked 57 on Board Game Geek. So, you know, almost in the top 50 games of all time. And how many new games have gone into that list recently? This is still right up there.
Yes. I just think when we talk about high price points, my mind immediately goes to dollars per minute.
Yeah.
This game says it plays in 60 to 120. You play at maximum player count, it'll be 120 plus. But you're still only talking about a dollar per minute of fun, and that's the first game. You play it twice and you're at 50 cents per minute, and that's for five people having such an amazing time.
And we've talked before how if you bought something like a Cosmic Encounter and you had five friends, you could play that every week, every fortnight, every month for the next however many years. This game, although it doesn't have the same sort of replayability because it doesn't have all the various powers, unless you add it with expansion stuff maybe, this is a game I could see you guys doing this. Our monthly game, our seasonally game of El Grande, where five good friends, because you probably want to be good friends, sit around and just yell horrible obscenities at each other for 2 hours. And, yeah, you will have an absolute ball. El Grande, it is a massive thumbs up. It would be probably be my game of the year if it wasn't 23 years old. And I'm not going to pull a Garth and put it in my games of the year. But it is very, very good.
All right, we'll be back with more classics and time for another classic now.
That was the hardest working man in the music industry, James Brown, with Papa's Got a Brand New Bag.
Ow!
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh, this week proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Now, Garth.
Hello.
You are a papa. Have you indeed got a brand new bag?
I should have a brand new suitcase, because this time next week I will almost be on holiday.
Oh, that's grand, but we don't care. What we want to talk about is something old, something classic even, and you're going to tell us about it right now.
Ever. So, yes, you talked about El Grande, which is a classic in the area control, and I have to talk about another classic of the negotiation style, because that is my bag, James Brown, and we are talking Chinatown. Chinatown by Carsten Hartwig, who has not really done anything else of note apart from Chinatown.
We didn't need to.
Published by about half a dozen or more different companies, and hopefully,
yes, God willing,
another edition some point in the next 12 months, courtesy of Z-Man Games.
Yes, because next year it is its 20th anniversary.
I know, it came out in 1999.
And this?
I was 12, starting high school in 1999.
I was living in Belgium in 1999, drinking my way through Belgium.
I was a house dad with my at home looking after my one-year-old son living in Sydney.
Well, there you go. My time in Belgium was spent not only consuming every type of Belgian alcohol, which took me 3 months to finish every single beer variety in the local pub, but I transported dangerous goods around. So all the stuff that you cannot take on planes, my job was to take those on planes.
Whilst drinking beers.
Oh, it was fantastic. I was always sober on the job, for anyone listening. But I got paid to fly around and take all these bits and pieces to all far-flung parts of the world. It was amazing. Board games are cool too.
Yeah, they are.
Chinatown is an absolute classic. This is a negotiation game where up to five rival players are all trying to develop their businesses in this particular part of New York City to make the most money. Rounds will work where you'll each have some businesses, you'll each have some land. You will then try and negotiate with the five players at the table who wants which bits of land and who wants which businesses, and then you'll place those businesses, and whoever does it the best will get the most money, and that is how you win.
Yep.
Doesn't sound too complicated, and it's really, really not.
No.
But this game, which it says plays in an hour, and it actually does, is some of the best hour of your life you will ever have if you have the stomach for pure negotiation games.
Yes, because as we said before, El Grande, you need to kind of remember we're just friends playing a game. This game, you definitely need to remember that. But even
for sure.
But even more than El Grande, how I said that you could argue that games like Small World and stuff, they're definitely inspired by an El Grande. There is nothing like Chinatown that I've played. I could be wrong. There could be other stuff that in the world that we just haven't got around to yet. But I've not played any other game like this.
The only one that reminds me a little bit of this one, and it is quite different, is Acquire, which is another really old school like trading of stocks. But
that's older a game as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there's nothing new. I mean, Acquire would be even older. There's nothing new. And look, I have to say...
Sorry.
This game, for me, it would be my number one pick for games that people probably don't know about, and they should. It is that good.
I'd never heard of it until you guys had talked about it, and I was like, you talked about it a few times. I was like, yeah, whatever. And then I played it and just went, how? How is this not on every shelf next to Carcassonne, next to Settlers? How? How impossible?
I picked this game up at Area 52 years and years ago for about $45. I still remember the one box that was there and picking it up and seeing that price tag and going, it's mine. But this game, you can't quite describe the excitement and the tension of the negotiations until you are sitting at the table playing it.
Mm.
Each player, at the start of the game, you just dealt a series of randomised 85 cards where you will get a couple of them every single round, and they're the bits of land that you own. You own those and you'll mark them and they're my territory, but then you're going to draw out just a random smattering of businesses, which could be tea shops or laundromats or restaurants or fish shops or jewellery shops. You got no idea, and neither do your competitors until they're all revealed simultaneously and the game actually then begins. And you've got five people furiously trying to negotiate over a laundromat while these other people over there are negotiating over a fish shop while you're trying to negotiate over this one little piece of real estate so you can finally make your shop complete. And then you've got to math it out, which doesn't take too much, which is fine. But you get to do it all again six times and have such a wild, fantastic experience all over a subject matter that if you talk about, yeah, we're going to spend the next hour doing some wheeling and dealing over real estate, doesn't sound particularly enticing.
No, it doesn't.
Unless you're Donald Trump or one of those people that like doing the deals.
No, he'd just get somebody else to do it and take the blame and all respect.
Yes.
Look, this game, I would say, for the first five rounds, is some of the best gaming you can have around the table. The sixth round, personally, and I hate to say it, does get a little bogged down, particularly in the super maths of it, because you can work it out and the deals start to become all about min-maxing.
Yeah.
My advice is play this game negotiation-wise with a timer.
Oh, yes.
So that you cannot get bogged down by someone going, okay, that's 10, 20, 30, 150, this going to give me that, blah, 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 because that's where the game does fall down.
It's not a fun way to play it. It's more fun to just go, give me those three and I'll give you these two. And just like, why?
That fly by the seat of your gut. Yeah, just exactly. Go for it. And if it feels right, do it. If it doesn't feel right, then you might win.
Because of negotiation, you absolutely have the choice. Do I want to do this or not? That's completely up to you. Whereas the randomness of the certain locations you get, sometimes you get lucky and go, that's exactly next to the guy's, you know, he wants to build 10 things in a row and I've got his thing and I've got him pretty much by the short and curlies. Or you could just have businesses like I did that were just all over the bloody shop that had no reason for anything whatsoever, but they come in handy eventually.
That's one of the things about this game is the fact that you want a minimum size of business to really get your return or just like the maximum size you actually get your I don't know what you'd call it, the best amount of money you're going to get. Yeah. You maximise your returns, yes. But there are more than those, that number of that shop. So you think, I've got this one here. I know Trent just needs one more tea shop to get his best returns. I've got two tea shops here. Maybe I can trade him one. Or I've got that spot that he really, really needs. And then someone else gets the spot on the other side and they also have a tea shop. Or he gets a tea shop and it just throws
chaos into the mix. The other thing I find about this game is sometimes you don't know how good or bad a deal you've made until the next turn.
Absolutely.
And then you see what you get and what the other person get, and you think, oh, why didn't I keep that one? Or didn't I get more money for it?
The joy of this game is that at the start of every round, it's all completely random. You're dealt some face-down property cards that you have no control over what they're going to be. So you own the walls, you own the bricks and the mortar, but what goes into those is it's up to the negotiation, because you'll always have some tiles left over that you can argue and fight over. But the properties, they're random to some extent. You'll get some cards and you'll be able to choose a few of the properties that you own, and then the rest go into a discard pile, which they'll cycle back and you'll get them again. But I really love the mix of I've got some control over the properties I choose to own, because they might be good for me or they might be good as a bargaining tool. But then what I'm going to put in those, it's coming out of a bag, and I've got to try and make the most of that, again, either through my own skill or through negotiation.
Yeah, because it's thematic, but it's realistic in the sense that you make deals with other people, but those deals will play out over time, that you could both make a deal and think, ah, sucker, whereas one of you will end up being of you will end up being, or you could both be completely wrong, or you could both have made a deal that had just both made you the kingpins of the board. But you just can't tell until the game progresses, which is like real business in real life. And we're forgetting the fact that during this game, Mark could have won my wife's car, but he chose not to do it.
We did do that, Mark, didn't we? Yes. Leon put his keys on the table, very much like every classic poker move in every movie. They were on there.
Mainly because Mark was crying poor that I'm going to be last. And we all just went, you're absolutely not going to be last. Stop saying that. We think you're near the top. And he just kept saying that we're going to be last. And eventually we all just went, I'll tell you what, if you're going to be last, Garth put out real money on the table. I put my wife's car keys. Luckily, no hands were shaken because Mark ended up being last by quite a substantial mile.
And it was interesting because, as again, that very first round, sometimes that can be a make or break because it's so hard to tell what things are worth. You don't want to leave yourself penniless. Sometimes you want to put your tiles down to get quick money, but then other times you want to hold back because these businesses, they can be as small as 3 to get your maximal returns or as big as
6.
And sometimes you're not going to get 6 contiguous spaces before the end of the game. So you've got to decide, do I go early and small? Do I go later? Do I hold on? You know, knowing when to hold them and when to fold them. And this can be really tough.
Yeah, and just like realistic, you know, in real life, that do you decide that, okay, I've got this business that Mark really wants. Do I turn the screws on him now? Because in 5 rounds, something that could happen that you would not have seen in a million years, oh, no, he's got the 2 things I need to win. But because of what I did to him 3 rounds earlier, you know, he's mathed it out in his head, but also spite is still a thing.
Exactly.
And, yeah, they just kind of, you go, no, not going to give it to you. Just like,
but look, a very simple strategy for new players is try and negotiate anything that doesn't involve you spending your money.
Yeah.
And this is the trick that I fell into the first couple of times I played it, is I was spending money as a bargaining tool. When someone would say, oh, yeah, I'll give you that. You know, you can take that and we'll swap a laundromat for a fish shop, plus give me $30,000. And I'd go, oh, yeah, because that'll be great. But you've got to remember that it's all about the money at the end. Nothing else matters. Keep those money tokens on your person.
It is like one of the games where you are, well, I guess it is, you know, you don't have that separation between money and victory points. Money is victory points, and you're willing and dealing with money, but then that same money at the end of the game is what wins it for you. That makes it really tough because sometimes you know, I'm going to get a massive amount of money if I can get that big shop nice and early. But, oh, you know, I just don't want to pay too much for it.
I know.
It's so tight.
So, yeah, Z-Man Games, we're pretty much, like many, we'd be down on our knees pleading, please, for the love of God, reprint this. And reprint it, either make a real crazy deluxe version that, like, gamers will get into, or what I would prefer them to do, make a version kind of similar to the one it is now, which is not, you know, aesthetically, it's not that amazing. Make it relatively cheap. So it can be on the shelf. So people like us, and like, shut up and sit down, they're massive fans of it as well. So people like us can just scream it from the high heavens that this should be next to, like I said, the Carcassonne that everybody should have, the King of Tokyo that everybody should have.
I actually Facebook messaged Z-Man today just saying, have you got any news for us at all? Because there's been sort of news of this reprint, and then there's been news of it being delayed and da-da-da-da, and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Haven't heard back.
Yeah.
So I would like to have some information, but I don't, which is a real shame because it doesn't matter. I love this version of the game, but I'd probably buy the new
one. Well, this game is that damn simple, and the board is that kind of bland, and the pieces are just little bits of cardboard. As we were playing this, got on the old phone and had a look at your eBays, your BGGs and stuff. You can't get it for love nor money under your mid-hundreds, near 200s. It's near, if we found out, Z-Man went, no, we're not reprinting it anytime nearly soon, it's near worth that.
Yeah.
Which I, like I said, this is somebody who's probably wasted a few $100 on Kickstarter before on some mini thing that ended up
also Fury of Dracula before that got reprinted. Gloria Rome still sells for hundreds and hundreds of dollars because you can't get a copy.
Yeah.
And I think this game is a classic.
Part of the reason maybe it stayed underappreciated, it hovers in that. So in the Board Game Geek ranking, it's number 365.
Criminal.
Which is just in nowheresville. You know, it's not in the top 100, but it should be. It just floats around. And again, to look at it with the sensibilities of modern board games, as you said, Leon, you know, you've got some little chips to put on your spaces. You've got those number cards. You've got the little cardboard tiles out of the businesses. You've got some, God forgive, paper money, and a really bland board. I mean, you could do so much with this, but I'm in your camp, Leon. I want this to be a $30 board game that everyone can afford to have in their collection and just appreciate it for what it is. And I so want to second the timer. I mean, we might have played the extreme version where we played, 2 minutes?
2 minute timer, yeah.
It was so tough, and there were a lot of deals that didn't get resolved when the timer ran out, where it was like, I can't quite decide. But the game just sang. I said,
fantastic.
Would it have even been an hour? I don't know. And I mean, I know we particularly need the timer because we just want to wheel and deal backwards and forwards, but I loved it so much.
Yeah, but it has to be worth mentioning that El Grande and Chinatown, that the reason that, probably one of the reasons they might not be as big as they are, mainly because availability and price and whatnot, is that these two games are us personified. They're not for everybody. There would be some people that have played this game, might not have even finished it and gone, I hate this. I hate every second of playing this. This is not me at all. We're literally, you know, you're arguing with your loved ones, your friends, This is horrible. Whereas, if you're monsters like us, we could not recommend these two games any higher.
As long as you can leave it at the table.
Yes, which is exactly where it should always be.
Now, one of the best games of this I played was earlier in the year when I went up to Brisbane. Had a couple of spare days.
Yes.
Now, I was very lucky enough to play this with the Rule and Make team. So I played this with Alan Chang and Al Kearney and then Baranthus, the designer of Hand of Fate. They were tough. They would say, like, we would be in a negotiation and I'd say, I'll give you, you know, two fish shops for this. No. And they'd just absolutely stonewall me for the rest of the round. It's like I didn't exist. You know, Al, she was lovely and she'd give me a couple of bits and pieces here, but Baranthus, brutal. It made me feel so good when I beat them all. It was wonderful, but it was such a great game and that memory will stick with me forever. And that's what I love about negotiation games. You will always remember those because of the extremes of emotion that you get. You get that amazing feeling when you seal that deal and you know it's going to get you the game. And you get the heartbreak when you know you've tried your best and you've basically given everything to try and get this one little bit of land or area or whatever it is that's going to hopefully get you the win. And you just get shot down. There is so much fun, but it is not for the faint-hearted.
No.
There you go.
On that note, Mark, throw us to a song and we'll have to finish with another classic.
I think that people who don't like these classics, and particularly who don't like Chinatown, there must be something strange about them.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look- Hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month, and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts, and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
Well, that was The Doors with People Are Strange, and you are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
We're not strange.
Thankfully, we are incredibly strange, but we're comfortable with that.
Comfortably strange.
Indeed. Now, Mark.
Garth.
Like that fine bottle of wine that may or may not be corked, would you like to talk us through our third, what we've been playing lately?
Absolutely. And to stick on theme, this one is a classic among classics. It is, of course, Funkenschlag, better known to us in the English-speaking world as Power Grid. And I don't know if you knew, Funkenschlag was originally a crayon-based game. If you've ever seen those crayon rails where you join up railway tracks with crayons, it was very similar to that, where you were joining up your power grid, your network of power stations, with crayons. And now, of course, when it came out in English as Power Grid in 2004, Friedemann Fries, he's the designer. Now, this one is the highest ranked of the of our three classics tonight, Board Game Geek rank 34, and it's also the 29th ranked strategy game.
That's pretty crazy. It's still 34 after all these years.
There you go. Well, I mean, this one not quite so old, but it is 14 years old. So, been reprinted so many times.
So it came out in when?
2004.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was what? What was I in 2004?
You were a chubby young lad.
14 years. Oh, 17. I would have been. And then the next year, I would have been a foot taller and there a lot thinner. Because I was a late bloomer.
There you go.
Hello, ladies.
So, Power Grid. So, as I mentioned, it is the game of building competing power stations, competing power companies, where you're trying to spread power throughout the land. And you can have coal-fired power. It's so clean. Mm. You can have oil and gas-powered plants. You can have garbage-fueled plants.
Don't forget nuclear.
You can have nuclear.
Because of that, that stupid, you can't pronounce, I do not know which one's the right one. I know it's stupid because he ruined it for the rest of the world, and that's why I refuse to say that word, because it's just been embedded in my mind. I don't know which one the right one is now.
Mark, can you educate young Leon?
I think that's a task.
Hang on,
past
let me give
me
a crack. I feel so uncomfortable.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. That's what I thought, nuclear. And he
nuclear.
Said
nuclear.
Nuclear.
Anyway, you can have nuclear plants, and then you can also have your amazing green energy plants that don't need any fuel at all. Because it comes from the sun, or the wind,
or the
fusion
ocean.
Yeah, or the fusion projector, but don't worry about the projector.
What's your sound effect for fusion, Mark? Yeah, sure, that'll look
powering the spaceships.
Yeah.
So the original Power Grid, it had a double-sided map. It was Germany on one side, the USA on the other side, and the other night, excitingly, we played with a different map. Never played it before. We played with the Benelux map on one side, which is Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg. Or on the other side, you've got Central Europe. And there's
Looks very interesting. We played the Benelux side. I want to try the Central Europe side as well. But
yeah, it's had some nuke-free zones, isn't it?
One of the great things about Power Grid is the amount of maps you can get. So there are, and they're all double-sided technology, which we love here on the Diceman Cometh. So as well as those ones I mentioned, you can get France and Italy, China and Korea, best of friends, Brazil on one side, Spain and Portugal on the other side, Russia and Japan, Northern Europe, backed with UK and Ireland. Those things are getting further and further apart as we speak. And even Australia on one side and the Indian subcontinent on the other side. Now, if I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Australian map of Power Grid, there's a lot of empty space.
Okay.
There's like this big network down the eastern seaboard and then a couple of links going right across, and that's about it.
Does Tasmania feature anywhere?
I think there might be one link down to Tasmania, perhaps.
Okay, I'm having a look now.
But are those ones that on, like, the western side, are they worth, say, a lot more than the rest of them, perhaps?
Yeah, I can't remember to tell the truth, but it's just there's a lot of empty space on the map. And then that doesn't even get into all the print-and-play maps. I mean, it's almost like you think of a country or a region, there's a print-and-play map of Power Grid that someone has made. Now, and as I said, this... I think the newest version is a sort of deluxe-y version where it's been upgraded a little bit. I do love the paper. This is one game I do love the paper money.
Oh, I hate the paper money. This paper money is in the same quality as an original Monopoly money.
Yeah.
It bends. It is flimsy. You can tear it. I really don't like the new money because they've exchanged paper money for these crappy little tokens that I don't like. There needs to be some middle ground. This is a travesty.
I have no issue with that horrible paper money. I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing or it just doesn't bother me.
I feel bad because I bent Carl's money. We played his copy last week.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there's not much secret information in Power Grid. So much is out there. You know how many power stations you've got. You know how much income you're going to draw. You know what power stations you've got and therefore generally also how many resources you've got. So you know how many cities everyone's going to power. The only bit of secret info is money and everyone's tucking it away, hiding it under the table. There's no player aids that you can hide behind. And everyone's flicking through because this game is all about the math and working out maximum optimization. So you're on your knees, like you're sitting down and you've got on my left knee, well, that's the money I need for buying resources, but I better put some money in there because you know, people will buy more and it'll cost me more. And then this is the money I've got over here. The money gets so much use, it needs to be better quality.
That was just an excuse for you to play with yourself for 30 seconds or so, wasn't it?
And it would, talk about money.
It would be well suited with some lovely poker chips like the new version of Brass, that's for sure. Now, I sort of skimmed over it before, but just to touch on it. So the objective of Power Grid is to supply the most cities with power. Now, depending on what map you're playing and how many players, generally the end game will be triggered by a certain number of cities being built. So in the game we played, it was 15. If only I had learned to count to...
No, it was 17.
That's where I went wrong, because I couldn't count to 17. So then the turn sequence is so important in this game, and player order is so important. So player order is determined by the person who's powering the most cities and going down.
Yeah, worst player goes first.
So the player order is determined by the person who powers the most cities, but then you bid for power plants, which is the first part of the turn, in player order. You then bid for resources to power your plants, the coal, the oil, the nuclear,
the garbage,
in reverse player order, and then you build your new power plants and connect your cities in reverse player order. And it's amazing how many times you will pull your turn because I don't want to go first this time. I want to go closer to the back. Or this time I really need to get first because there's a power plant that I really want to bid on. And I love the bidding in this. It is one of the most fun bidding games, even though you wouldn't say bidding is a huge part of this game, but it's a critical part.
Oh, I would say bidding is an incredibly important part of this game. And the reason for that is it's the first time you're going to be spending your money that you've just earned. And everything revolves around the money that you've earned. And how many times, Mark, has it come down to I'm $1 short of what I really need to do? So every dollar counts. Now, the power plants, when they're up, they all are numbered from from 3 through to 50, is that right? And the number on the power plant denotes the minimum acceptable bid. That's it. the player who's ever first or whatever, they will make the first bid on whatever power plant. And there's always four available in 99% of the game. The last round is slightly different. But they'll bid on a thing. And then it'll go round and round and round and round. And it's one of those ones that if you pass, you can never come back on. But a power plant that starts off at 10 could sell at 10, or it could sell at 20, or it could be passed on or overall. The bidding is incredibly important because of the flow-on effects that that then gives you.
And as we saw in our game, the fact that you can only have three power plants, that's your limit. And so you start off where, in some cases, it'll be two or three pieces of fuel to power that power plant to power one city.
Yes.
And as the power plants get more and more expensive and higher numbers, it might then be three or four pieces of fuel to power two cities. And then towards the end of the game, you will have one piece of fuel perhaps might power three or four or five cities. You might get a nuke that will, one piece of fuel might power six cities.
I love that one.
And that combination where you're constantly trading out one, bringing in one, trying to maximize how many cities you can power, at the same time you've got to spend your money that you're not bidding on the resources. And then there's the whole resource market where it only refills a certain amount. There's a table which tells you how many new resources go into the market at the end of each turn. And so one of the interesting things about the Benelux map was, because it's close to the North Sea, you've got a lot of access to oil and gas. So oil and gas were sort of plentifully available.
It was very plentiful.
Plentiful. There was lots of it. It was cheap early on, whereas coal, there's not a lot of coal in that part of the world. So coal was a bit harder to come by than in the sort of standard game.
Exactly.
Because obviously Germany, I think it's the Ruhr Valley where they've got quite a bit of coal, although maybe not so much these days. And it gets shipped over from Australia, of course. But that was one of the little different mixes about the Benelux map was oil was a bit cheaper, coal was a bit more expensive.
So what do you guys think you like better, the power or the grid? I think I like the grid better, personally. I'm also tipping my hat that I have not played this.
That's why being very quiet.
No, I've never got around to playing it. I know when we first went to the Hobart Game Society along with my wife, she ended up in a game where this was like five, like maximum people, all of which had played it before, and I ended up by the end of the night, she was just like, this is so intimidating. This is just insanity.
So look, we've only got a couple of minutes left to go. I think it's pretty clear to say that this game is an absolute classic because it mixes a whole bunch of fantastic elements. It mixes, not negotiation, but it mixes the bidding mechanic. Yeah. It then really has a massive element on strategy, like you said, Mark, about where you want to be able to be in that player order. And you'll dictate a lot of what do I power based on the decision that you need to make for the following round. And it's really, really important. Plus, it's got not area control, but it's got control of power plants. And the way you place them has a massive impact because you'll reach a critical mass where you can't reach any more available cities to place your power plants on your network without having to bypass and skip through a couple of competitors' areas, which is a very expensive exercise to do. Now, Mark.
Yes.
I think we need to let you tell your story about when you played Power Grid for the first time. Is that one story you would like to tell?
No.
You sure?
No. I should let those people forget the fact that they used calculators and they played it lots and lots of times and I didn't have a calculator and it was the first ever time I played them. I played that game and I won. But it is one of those ones like Chinatown and even like El Grande where that last turn you're really mathing it out because every dollar counts, and so often you'll run out of dollars. I will mention, this game won the 2004 International Gamers Award. It won a heap of awards since, and it won another, its latest prize, which is the Netherlands Spellens Prize, it won in 2010. So this game has won awards over 7 years.
That's amazing.
That's staying power.
Yeah, and it's still available, unlike the other two. Well, you can get El Grande, but it's a big box.
Now, I hate to say it, we have to exercise our going power.
Yeah.
Because it's time to get going, because we're going to play more games.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight to talk through these three classics. If you haven't played these games, please, please play them.
And when we put the episode up on the Facebooks, please comment on the post classics that you believe people should get to the table much, much more.
Absolutely.
And also, on the iTunes, give us an old cheeky 5 stars. It helps new people come along, and we like that.
And on that note, we're out of here, eh, guys?
Absolutely.
So we've been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode, what, 233?
Yep.
Yeah.
And we will see you all next week.
Boya.
You've been listening to another episode of the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.